Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Nation. That's the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Camaro Dave and Commander Chris coming to you from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, Oregon. And you can hear the show courtesy of the Envision Radio Network across the country. My favorite friend and gastronomical pioneer, Graham Kerr, is here today with us. I don't know what to say. This is the guy that always inspired me to do what I do. And so we're going to be talking to Graham in a couple of minutes here. This portion of Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef the way nature intended. And our music today, Rod Stewart. Little Scottish music there for you, Graham, my friend. How are you?
Do you know, it's wonderful to think that I actually inspired a cowboy to cook. I mean, you know, if there's anything I look back upon my entire career, which is get it increasing by the hour, I can't think of anything better, especially such a good friend as you.
Ah, well, that's delightful that you say that. Yeah, but happy Christmas, Merry Christmas to you too. But you, and for folks that haven't heard me talk about this, I don't know why you haven't if you ever listened to the show, but Graham was the one that inspired me to cook. Used to watch him on TV when I came home from school. And then I'll make this very brief. And then my aunt, elderly aunt that was living with us at the time, if we thought we could do the recipe, she would write it down. She would bring the ingredients home, and then I would try to copy it the next day. And I did that for a long time with all your stuff. So there you go. And I figured out how to use arrowroot, and it's very small portions of arrowroot, not large. So,
yes, well, they're getting a little smaller as I'm getting a little older. it's either that or I have to keep getting broader, and I'm trying to avoid it.
Well, I understand that. So let me ask you a fairly, I would consider, serious question. After all that you've done, all the television, the radio, the travel, everything, because you've had a very fulfilling life, what is the one thing, if you can point to one thing, what is the one thing that you've learned about what you do?
Gosh, what a lovely question. It takes time to cook for people. And it took, for example, the program that you used to watch in the old days, it took me 19 and a half hours on average to actually record and rehearse and work out the method and do all of the stuff, you know, from the first moment through to the end of the program being recorded. 19 and a half hours of my life went into each show. When I pulled somebody out at the end of the program, which I have always done when I've had an audience, always, and that's about 800 programs that I've done that way. When that person sat down and got their fork into the food and got it into their mouth, was the moment that I understood why I do what I do. Mm-hmm. Because it meant that all of that research and all of that effort was going to be eaten by somebody else, and there was a good possibility that they would like it. And when they like it, there's a kind of ripple effect which comes off that face when that face starts to savor something you worked on for so long. And it is such an encouragement. And I don't mind who is cooking for who. I think you have to be almost brain dead not to experience an enormous wave of joyful satisfaction that what you've done is being appreciated by someone you care for.
I can tell. Yeah, I think that is a tremendous observation, because I can tell you that in all the TV shows I've done, which is not as many as you, but quite a few, I work better in front of a live audience. And when you can give somebody a taste at the end of whatever you're doing, that makes that, and they're sincere because they cut off a piece or they put it in their mouth or, you know, on the fork, what have you. That is so good to see that reaction on their face. It is just terrific.
It's worth all of that time. You think about looking back to Thanksgiving. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes.
As normal. Yeah. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And I think of your listeners at the moment who put work into that thing. And they did some of the food which they're used to doing at Thanksgiving. And the family is expecting to be able to have that. And the family has it and eats it and enjoys it. And there is, it's worth the effort to see their faces when they enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely. And it's, you know, for a while there, I did catering, but I haven't for a long time. And when people would come and they would get whatever we were preparing and put it on there, they could self-serve most of the time, you know, kind of a buffet style, but they'd come down and do that. And you could watch them, and they'd go to their respective table and sit down, and they would go, wow. And you'd see the smile on their face. That was always what made it worth it for me too. I mean, made it not just feel good inside, but it gave you that kind of sense of satisfaction, I think, Graham.
Do you know, there is a famous phrase which I actually had a tremendous experience of. And I was told once that if you ever, when the main dish goes out at a banquet or, you know, a major event, and the noise level goes down as people start to eat, if there can possibly be at that moment in smaller parties silence, then you know that you have won. And I once had this experience in New Zealand where the Governor General of New Zealand was a fellow called Lord Cobham, and he used to be a customer of mine when I was the general manager of the Royal Ascot Hotel in England. And he came out to New Zealand, and he heard that I was there as the chief catering advisor to the Air Force. So he sent a note saying, it would be just like the old days. I'd like to have a dinner, Governor General's dinner, and you do all the food. Would you do that for me? And I said, of course, my lord.
Yeah.
And so I was new to, and I'd only been in the country about 3 or 4 weeks at that stage. So I got some duck because I knew that he liked duck, and I knew he liked trout. I didn't understand that the trout would be 9 pounds in weight. I was expecting a 6 or 7 inch trout, so I had this truckload of trout, and there were 34 people at the dinner. And we got the local ducks, and the cook sergeant said to me, very New Zealand fellow, he said, I'd boil them first if I were you, sir. And I said, oh my God. Can't boil a duck before you roast it. Should be roasted in butter, breast down. So in my very British accent, he says, okay, mate, it's on your shoulders. And so I did that, and they all looked wonderful, and it all went out, and there was that silence. And I said to the cook sergeant, there you are, son. They're eating it now and enjoying it, and there's the silence. And suddenly the the mess steward rushed in. He says, they're bending their forks in it. It was so tough, this New Zealand duck that I was unused to, really did need to be boiled first.
Oh, my word.
That got around that this fellow had arrived from England.
Yep.
And had properly messed up at his first banquet.
Oh, yeah. And leave it to a sergeant to let you know about that. We're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation. We're going to be back with my dear friend Graham, the Galloping Gourmet. If you don't know any better, you should know that. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Hey there, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT. We've got Graham Kerr with us today, my buddy. My mentor, my idol, what else can you say? I can say a lot of that in this. If you'd like to email us and hear me stop ranting about Grant or Graham, I mean, you can do it at BBQ. That's BBQ at SalemPDX.com. You can also find us on the SoundCloud. All you got to do is go Barbecue Nation JT and you'll find it. Of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter. All that, and like to say again hello to all of our affiliates, especially WCGO in Chicago that just came on not long ago. We appreciate you having us on your airwaves. Now back to my buddy Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet. So, you know, when you're cooking, and when you are, doesn't matter if you're cooking indoors or outdoors, Graham, to me, but when you're cooking, it takes a while to get the feel for it. And I know you understand what I'm saying here, but you got to get the feel for it. And especially if it's a dish that you're doing, you know, on a fairly consistent basis, you get the feel for it. But sometimes it takes a little longer to get the feel for certain things than other things. I mean, for me, beef was very easy because I grew up on a ranch. Fish was pretty easy because I could, you know, we had access to lots of seafood. That's fine. Chicken was always a little harder for me because we didn't eat a lot of chickens. My dad didn't like chicken. So what are your thoughts about people getting comfortable with certain types of food or certain dishes?
You know, I think that's a very wise comment because when you look at the whole business of a home kitchen, there's such a wide span. You've mentioned, you know, going from beef to fish, for example. For people who haven't had a personal fishing experience where they pull the trout out and sort of got it into a pan, fish tends to be looked at as another kind of meat, mm-hmm. which it really isn't. You know, don't have to cook a piece of fish so as to make it tender. It's tender in itself. You cook it so that the heat moves through it and converts the protein and turns it from translucent into opaque. And it needs to be juicy, So here's the point. I think it really is important to keep spreading one's interest. If one hasn't had a piece of fish for a long time and you don't really know how much to cook it for, by the way, an inch of fish can be cooked in a moderate pan, not a hot smoking pan. I know there are ways of doing that when they char the surface. I don't like that method because it leaves usually fish raw in the middle, and I really, even tuna, I really personally don't care for that. So in a moderate pan, 4 minutes either side for an inch is the absolute maximum to cook a piece of fish from. And I think, you know, one of the ways that can be helpful is to invest in a small thermometer so that you can just poke that thermometer into the flesh, find out it's about 145 degrees would be perfect. And that way you can train yourself to be able to look into that and have the confidence to be able to go back in again and enjoy it more the second time around. First time it's an adventure.
Oh yeah.
The second time it's a little bit better. But I'll tell you where I have my problem is cakes. I just don't like baking cakes. And the reason I think I don't like that is because everything has to be so damn measured. A level cup of sifted flour, first of all. Just don't dig into flour, but sift it first. And when you sift it and then measure it, it's a different measurement than when you just dig it into a flour sack. And it can make the world of a difference. I make a pastry for a pie, which is really good. The average top and bottom pastry for a pie is about 350 calories and has quite a high degree of fat with the normal butter crust. Mine comes out at about 160, and it's flaky, and it's beautiful. It's tender and wraps things beautifully in the crust. So I think this, I can tell you how long it took me to be able to get that pastry to come out like that. But if you keep working at it and keep the excitement of being able to get something that is truly wonderful, then and there, once again, dear Jeff, it's that person who is sinking their teeth into that pie and look at you and say, whoa, I really like this pastry.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I grew up, everybody knows how I grew up. I don't have to restate that for eternity. But my mom made hot water, lard, vinegar, sugar, and salt pie crust, and it was delightful. If you made it the proper way. If you didn't make it the proper way, it was thick and kind of sometimes hard, but most of the time pretty doughy on the bottom. The top part you could always make look pretty. It may be tough as a boiled owl, but it was like that. But I agree with you.
Sure.
I think I would say that we've got to go to break here in a minute, Graham. But one of the things is we kind of have what I would call a freelance brain. And in baking, it's too much like my chemistry classes in college. It was too exacting,
yes.
You know. And I had a good friend down here that told me that. He goes, yeah, baking is like chemistry and cooking is like your – you can be Picasso, you can be Van Gogh, you know, you can be Jackson Pollock if you want to be like that. And so I thought that was a pretty good analogy, actually. So
actually, that's the best analogy I've heard yet. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Graham and I are going to take a break here on The Nation, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. I hope you stay with us. You're listening to Barbecue Nation on the Envision Radio Network. Hey everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Hey everybody, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Graham Kerr today. Little music from the UK with one of my favorite artists from the day, Rod Stewart. As usual, this segment is brought to you by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef just like your grandpa used to raise, and if your grandpa didn't raise it that way, he should have. Also, you can find find us on SoundCloud. We're on most of the platforms out there. If you just type in Barbecue Nation with JT or Jeff Tracy, you'll find us. So I don't have to keep going around about that. One of the things Graham and I were talking about off the air is that his show, which was Graham Cares Kitchen, was an afterthought from the show that I got hooked watching him on. So that tells you how old I am and tells you how old Graham is. But Graham Cares Kitchen, you can now, well, I'm going to let him tell you where you can find it and find the cookbook. And we're going to go back and talk about the pastry dough in a minute. Go ahead.
Well, the important thing is that if one has Amazon Prime, and I'm really not here to talk you into at home getting Amazon Prime, I find the older I get, the less interested I am to have to drive downtown for just one thing that I want. And so I have a tendency to see whether it's on Amazon and then get them to send it to me. And I hate paying postage. So I signed on for the Amazon Prime. And so I get all the stuff without having to pay postage. And it comes so quickly nowadays. But the big thing for me was when I suddenly found out, and just recently, they have acquired, they never asked me, 52 of my episodes of a series which I did for PBS called Graham Cares Kitchen. And that's the summary of 1,800 programs that I've done in my life. Those last 52, I think, are the best thing that I ever did in my life. I didn't have an audience, and I missed the audience, but I am right into the camera and really teaching the food thing properly and having enormous amount of fun doing it. So there is an episode in that one called Pastry Crust. And every one of those 52 episodes, I'm looking at a basic method of cooking, not a recipe necessarily, although I do one. I do two, actually.
Yes.
But I want to be able to say, this is a way you can get a perfect pastry crust and have it less risky than it can be if it's made, you know, with a full-on lard or butter or whatever else it is. I do suggest using a little butter in it, but less, and finding a different way of doing that. It probably took me a dozen tests to be able to get to that place, but it really is a wonderfully tender, flaky, great crust. And it's less risky, and it's really very simple to do. And I actually do the demonstration in the book, which has the recipe in it, although I give all the ingredients at the time. I've always done that in my television program. The book, I went online to find out whether the book was still available, and it is. And it's only $4.
Well, there you go.
It means I don't get anything from it, but I don't care about that. If the book and the program, all 52 episodes are covered in that one book for $4. So I think that the combination of a cooking school of the best that I've done in my whole career and the book at the same time, and you have to pay postage on it, unless you've got Amazon Prime. Then
right.
Send it
for did you make people in your families guinea pigs for tasting? I do. And the reason I ask that is because once in a while I'll cook something and I'll come out and I'll say, my wife, I'll say, Shelly, will you try this? And she'll go, that's okay. And then I know I need a lot of work, or I'd better give up and do something else. Or if she comes out and she goes, man, that's really good. Did you use your family for guinea pigs?
Absolutely. You know, I had to do 195 new shows a year. And I never got it right the first time that I did. And I can't remember anything that I ever got to my taste right. So that meant that I had to cook just about every day of the year. So I was the home cook, and my family was the guinea pig. My poor family have eaten all the way around the world.
Yes.
And it may sound fun, but for them it was gruesome sometimes.
Yeah, I have to fess up and say that same here, because some of the concoctions worked, but a lot of them didn't first try.
Isn't it wonderful, though, honestly, Jeff, when they did like it?
Oh, yeah.
And it's family. And more and more, as my family have grown up and flown from home, and my wife Trina has passed, and I have a new family in the community in which I'm living, but they're not my family. And I miss them, especially at Thanksgiving and Christmas time.
Sure.
I must say. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough, but, you know, the thing, Graham, is you have left such an indelible mark on the world, on the culinary world, on the people you've reached out and become friends with over the years.
Yes.
And I don't know anybody that you're equal, honestly.
Well, it's nice to be. I'll tell you, I am going to be with my eldest daughter, who is looking after an older woman at the moment, and they've invited me, just the two of them, to have Christmas dinner with them. So I'm doing a roast leg of lamb basted with apple juice and orange juice, which makes a very, very interesting gravy, by the way. My daughter said, I'm going to do your smashed parsnips and carrots. We put equal quantities of parsnips and carrots together and steam them, mm-hmm. and then fork them together so that they're crumbly still, put them in a Pyrex dish, and then stick it in the oven with a little basting over the top of a little butter or olive oil, and just let it brown, you know,
sure.
like a shepherd's pie it would look like. There are other things as well, and she's going to make a white onion sauce, which is typically British in a sense. If you make a white onion sauce, just fry the onions up a little bit to release the oil, put some flour on the top of that, and then make it into a white sauce, and make about 2 pints of white sauce. That sounds a lot for about 6 people. But really, if you make enough, the leftover lamb can be chopped up and put into the white sauce and then reheated the next day. And it's a wonderful, the French have a term for it, fricassee. And this is a white sauce with the lamb in it. And it is really delicious. Especially with half a glass of white wine.
Oh, absolutely. absolutely. No, it's my family's big into leftovers, especially my daughter when she comes to visit. She doesn't live that far away now. She lived in Los Angeles and New York for a while, but now she's home. But when she comes to visit, there's certain things that she likes, and one of them is, like, if we've done a prime rib or a leg of lamb or something like that, whatever's in the fridge the next day, she likes that, and a twice-baked potato. And what I was going to get to, she also asked that you were talking about the you know, white sauce and onions and that. She wanted cream peas and onions for Christmas Day.
Oh, yes.
This year.
Yes. Yes.
So
the tiny, the little pearl onions.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
So that was her one request, because I let everybody put in a request. It doesn't mean I'll actually do it, but I let them think that I'm at least considering that for them. But yeah, I just thought that was kind of interesting that your daughter was doing that, and then my daughter asked for the peas and cream sauce and onions. So
yeah.
we're going to have to take a break, or the sponsors and stuff are going to nuke me, but Graham and I will be back here on Barbecue Nation in just a jiff. Stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with Graham Kerr today, the Galloping Gourmet, good friend and mentor. You're listening to the show courtesy of the Envision Radio Networks, and we thank all of our stations up and down the line for being with us. Couple quick things. Next hour will be Artie Davis, and next week we've got another new show coming up for you, but I'm not going to tell you who it is because I'm not sure if they're going to show up or not. How's that? Graham is going to stick around with us for the after hours show, but we were talking off the air and we were talking about portions, and I had mentioned that I was always used to cooking for a lot of people, and now other than like a Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving dinner where we do have, you know, guests and things like that. But now you go back and it's just when it's just me and my wife, I'm trying to learn to cook in smaller portions. And it's like going to rehab for me because I'm not used to it. And we do like leftovers. A lot of times I'll bring my experiments like here to the radio station or something, and those folks are always hungry, so they never complain, even if it's a terrible thing. But I'm telling you, it's like I need psychotherapy or something, Graham, to get over this.
No, you're perfectly normal. At home, I'm sorry to have to tell you just privately that Jeff is perfectly normal.
Uh-oh.
You know, he has a metabolism that's been dropping a little bit every year, and because he loves to eat and loves the look of the food on the plate, it's normal to him to continue to eat the way he has always eaten.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't continue to do that without gaining a lot of weight, actually. Now, I don't know whether you have or not, but because I haven't seen you face to face for some time. But here's what I'm going to toot my
toot away.
My horn for a moment. I am 2.5 pounds lighter than I was in 1970.
Oh boy!
And in 1970, I was the same weight that I was when I was 26 years old. So, and I have gone up and down during that period of time. So I know that when I eat a standard amount of food that I say is normal, that I am going to gain weight. I do that. And I have proven this to myself. When I choose to halve the portion of food that is dense in calories, say like a prime rib,
mm-hmm.
and a nice slice of prime rib, you probably never put it on the scales because you know what you're
doing. Sure.
But I know and you know that's about 12 ounces, right?
Right.
Okay. So if you halve that, it's 6 ounces. And you remember that commercial, where's the beef? And if you're used to the plate being covered with that slice of beef and you're halving it, you're just going to say to yourself, that's not my portion. That's not what I'm used to doing. But honestly, if you really love certain vegetables, like I just really love the parsnips and the carrots smashed up together. It's a wonderful combination. It's kind of sweet and different, and it's texturally interesting. And then that wide open Idaho potato with a crisscross top on it, all crusty and brown on the top. And then you have the 6 ounces of prime rib. the plate now, especially with your daughter's peas and a little onion. Oh, my, I can see it now. And do you know, by the time you finish the meal, you just don't miss the fact that you've had half the beef. But you've had more of the vegetables, and we need so much more plant food in our typical plates here in the United States, just so we can be well for as long as we can. Come on.
No, it's true. It's very true.
It's possible to do that.
Until next week, I appreciate y'all for Camaro Dave and Commander Chris. We thank you from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios. And we wish you all having a great week. Take care, everybody.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
I am sailing home again.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Envision Networks and Salem Media Group. All rights reserved. Copyright 2019.